Hello, fellow homebrewers. JP here, and I want to introduce to you the brand new Brewbuilt X1 Conical Series available at More Beer. More Beer sells the highest standard in homebrewing equipment, and the Brewbuilt Conicals are just that. They're made from mirror-polished 304 stainless steel, and they come with loads of features that you and I have been looking for. They have a full 2-inch bottom dump valve, which will eliminate your clogging issues, while the sturdy base includes 4 reinforced legs, just like those big pro tanks do. More Beer also carries the Brewbuilt line of options and add-ons like casters, pressure kits, and even external glycol chillers. So you can find out more about the new Brewbuilt X1 conical uni tanks by going over to morebeer.com for detailed videos on the entire line of Brewbuilt conicals. You can trust Brewbuilt with your next fermentation, and you can trust More Beer to find the right conical for you. Brewbuilt at morebeer.com.
Everybody, welcome to the session. I'm your host, Justin Crosley. We are back in the studio. An exciting show today. They're all exciting, but I get more excited about some than others. And today we have Sante Adarius, the star of Sante Adarius. Adair Paterno is in the studio with me. Welcome,
I'm
Adair.
Blushing, Justin.
You're a superstar.
Super excited. This is amazing.
I am. I'm so excited. It's fun to talk to you. I've only gotten to do interviews with you with other people.
This is true.
And so it was just always shorter, and I get to dive into you, to what is behind Adair this time, and that's exciting.
Oh, dear.
So, yeah, watch out. Teresa Pasuti is back in the studio co-hosting with me today from Crooked Lane, of course. Welcome back, Teresa.
Thank you. So excited. I'm excited for exactly the same reasons as you are.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
See, I knew you'd like this show, and it's worth the trek down from Auburn.
Right? Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. I haven't seen you in a while. I've been doing a lot of solo shows recently.
I know. Well, you know, you just got to put me in, coach, when you need me.
I do. And sometimes I do. It's because Beer Week had me doing like a lot of collaboration shows where we had 4 or 5 guests in here at a time.
Yeah.
And so getting through those, I was like, I'm not going to make anybody drive down for that. But yes, happy you could make it down.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
My pleasure.
So, a couple of things of business to get to real quick. Thanks to our sponsor, More Beer, the wonderful folks over at More Beer. Go to morebeer.com, check them out, and leave a little note when you purchase. Tell them thanks for supporting the Brewing Network, because I swear on everything that is mine and yours, we would not be here still without More Beer. They've just supported us for so long. Go check them out at morebeer.com and check out their YouTube page. They're giving away stuff all the time over there. And I just brewed a beer, another beer with Chris Graham.
I heard this.
I brewed a pale ale a little over a week ago.
It's
of
on
course.
Brand, pale and, ale.
Yep, yeah, that's always what I brew.
I heard they're coming back in style.
Oh, they're coming back so in style, Adair. We did a hop
yep.
grenade pale ale fest, you know, like kind of like the Bistro IPA fest.
Yep.
Nobody gave a shit,
yeah,
Adair. The brewers did.
If we put pale ale on a beer, people don't want to buy it. I don't know why. It's like it's yeah.
It's popular here, actually, and that's why
great.
We thought we could do it. The brewers were so excited.
Yeah, it's a brewer's beer for sure.
Yes,
these days.
Like for my spring beer festival, and eventually everyone signs up for it anyway. But it takes me weeks to get people to answer the email and say yes. When I sent out the pale ale email, immediately, like
everybody.
Within hours, everyone's like, "Yep."
Well, I know Cellar Maker did a big pale ale event during Beer Week, and I don't know how well
really?
It was attended. Yeah, I don't know how it was attended because I had another event that conflicted with it, but they did like a pale ale festival.
Oh, I'm going to have to
Beer
talk
Week.
To them. Okay.
Yeah, talk to Connor and Tim.
I want
to
know how it went.
You know, they're huge fans of the pale ale.
They are.
Yeah.
And yeah, they were part of ours too. They sent beer, so that was good. All right. So, yeah. Anyway, I brewed a pale ale. Brewed it like... kind of a mix between the old Mission Street pale ale
and love that beer.
That was and then Liquid Gravity's new pale ale,
yeah,
because he brewed the original one too, so we kind of, and anyway,
really?
Entering it into the National Homebrew Competition
That is so fun.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
what's going to happen? Like, if you're sitting there, are you going to be broadcasting yeah. the results?
Yeah.
But then your name gets called.
Right. I'll drop everything. I'll let the cameras just do whatever they want.
It's going to be like a I'm really going to get my award. Experience. Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
for just sure. cut to music.
Yeah.
Just, exactly. Just like, run away and it cuts to music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just put that thing on the screen that's like,
And I'm gonna give a really long like Oscars acceptance speech, which is not allowed at the homebrew. You just get your medal and get off the stage. But I know them and they can wait for me to give my speech. Yeah. I will have been waiting 18 years.
Well, you can literally mic yourself up and exactly. like have that going. So when you get up there,
I'm literally in control of the thing. So what are they gonna do?
Yeah,
I might give a 10-minuter.
I think you should.
I have so many people to thank.
Yeah. Will you thank me up there, please?
Of course. we'll see how it goes. I have two beers going into the competition, me and Chris Graham. So one of them is the same as last year. We entered Tasty's Dortmunder.
Oh, nice.
We messed that beer up. Mm. We didn't ferment it too great. We're entering it again. Did not mess it up. Tasted it the other day.
Good.
And then the pale ale. So we'll see how that goes.
Right on, man.
So
that's fun.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
Yeah. So, and then at the same time, a little plug for HomebrewCon. It's in June. Go. It's in San Diego this year, and I will be there. Okay. What else do I need to promote to you real quick? Tickets are on sale for Spring Brews Festival. It's March 25th, rain or shine. So go to thebrewingnetwork.com and get your tickets now. While they're still there, they're selling pretty quick. So I don't want you to miss out on that. Go to thebrewingnetwork.com and buy your Spring Brews Fest tickets. I have exactly 60 breweries signed up for it, which is where we used to be pre-COVID. We had built it up that, but then last year, first year back, a bunch of breweries still were having trouble even staffing their tasting rooms. And so lots had to kind of bail just to stay in business that day, right?
Yeah.
This year, we're now I have to turn people away. We're maxed out at 60.
Really?
That's great.
Oh, that's so cool. Really, it's going to be a hoot.
Yeah. Yep. It'll be a good time. Our 12th year.
So. Wow. Mm-hmm. 12 years.
Yeah. Next year's 13, but I'm a very superstitious person.
Just skip it.
So I'm going to call it 14. And and it would have been our 14th if it weren't for COVID. So
it's like elevators and airplanes, yeah. right? Like no
yeah.
13th.
Hotel room floors. Yeah. yeah. No 13th floor.
So I'm just like, no one's even going to pay attention, right? But I will pay attention if I have to promote 13 all year next year.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah. I think I'm just so you know. You didn't miss one if you've been counting. Okay, and then we're going to talk about it today, but the California Craft Beer Summit is happening next week. Starts March 19th through the 22nd. All three of us in this room will be there, and you can get your tickets at californiacraftbeer.com. It's a great summit. You'll hear more about it during the show today, but go get your tickets. It's fun, and it's pretty intimate, too. You really get to hang out and talk with the folks that you see there. It's not so big that everyone's just a face passing you by in the hall. So go to californiacraftbeer.com and get your ticket. If you have any interest in the beer industry, you're going to want to go to this summit with us. Okay. And then lastly, hey, support all of our sponsors, the 21st Amendment, Williams Brewing, Beersmith Brewing Software, all of those people who keep us in business. Thank them from me for keeping us here. All right. That's it, Adair. Now it's all about you.
Oh, fabulous. I love talking about myself.
Right. well, let's just start with the simple stuff, and that's the beer. In our glass, right?
Yes.
What are we drinking?
Okay, so I brought a beer of ours that I love but is underloved. It's called Summer Sapling. This beer, we originally brewed this with Casita Brewing Company. So Ryan Witter, we met him when he was actually brewing at Hill Farmstead.
Okay.
He started a side brand out of Hill Farmstead called Casita with his wife, Mahalia, and they are lovely, lovely people. Mm. And they were on a cross-country journey after they left Vermont, and the first time we brewed this beer, we brewed this with him. So this is a Belgian-style blonde ale, hopped pretty heavily to keep the acid down. Mm. We just run it through our bottling line. So this actually doesn't see oak. It doesn't get our bugs, but our bottling line is full of them. We only, all of our bottled beers are mixed fermentation style beers. We don't bottle anything clean in a 750 bottle. We do have, I should sort of backtrack. We do have a smaller bottling line that we've started bottling 500 milliliter, like bourbon barrel aged beers on.
Nice.
But our main bottling line is only mixed fermentation beers. So this doesn't actually get hit with any bugs, but we run it through our bottling line and it just picks up, you know, whatever residue is in there.
Sure does.
And then we condition it in the bottle for usually a minimum of about 3 months. So it's bottle conditioned. And I think it's just a nice, light, sort of easy drinking beer with a bright but very light acidity. It's one of my favorite beers to drink with food.
Oh yeah.
You know, and kind of like lighter foods, salad for instance. It's a total table beer.
In the bottle conditioning, there's no Brett either?
Oh, there's Brett.
There's Brett. Okay. Yeah.
I mean, we have Brett everywhere.
Yeah. Well, of course it's going to pick it up coming through the the lines, but you add that to the bottle conditioning as well.
No,
that's what I meant. You don't add any.
No. We don't pitch. We add sugar and let it do its thing with whatever it picked up on the bottling line.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
Got
that
it.
That's so cool. I mean, what I'm really happy to learn about this from a brewing standpoint is I don't love to have any wild fermentations happening in my beer either. Like if we do it wild, we're doing it in a barrel. But just to think that it's enough to run it through a bottling line with sugar and having it pick up the bugs there.
Yep.
That's novel information.
And we do
for me.
Clean our bottling line. I just want to make this clear to the listeners out there. This isn't like a disgusting bottle. I mean, we do clean it, but you know, there's only so much you can do with things like Brett and lacto and, you know, all the little rubber pieces and parts, you know, they pick up bugs over time.
Sure. So, wow. Which is why like Russian River has separate hoses, separate everything.
Separate kegs, separate
building almost, yeah, really. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, so, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, no, that makes sense. And it does, you know, you were describing it even before the show. It is not overly sour.
Correct.
But it picks up plenty of character.
It sure does.
I think it does.
Yeah, it sure does.
And you mentioned hoppy to keep the acidity down. Mm-hmm. So the hops affect the pH of the beer?
Yeah, typically, and I'm not a brewer, so I don't want to like get off course, but you know, typically, you know, if you're including more bitterness in the beer, it's going to help tamp down the lactic acid and the acidity of the beer.
Okay.
And so this is pretty highly hopped with noble hops.
Got it.
Saaz is one of my favorites.
Saaz is great.
I know.
So delicious.
I know. It's so good.
Like that can never go out of fashion for me.
Right? Me neither.
In fact, some of the new hops, like even the really new school dank hops, to me have like some of those Saaz characters that I like.
Yep.
Yeah, this is a great beer.
It's great. This particular bottle, I mean, honestly, is a little... The carbonation didn't get where I would like it to be, so it's a little bit... Yeah, it's a little low.
Yeah.
But the flavors are still there that I really love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Love this.
Yeah, it's, like, just really low on tartness, but, like, a lot of, like, apricot and, like, peach. Like, really nice flavors. I got kind of a... I stirred it up a little when I was pouring it, so mine is a little different than yours, so I wonder if, like, some of the goodness...
Yours looks a little more spritzy.
It does. It's... Honestly, it's great. It's really good. Like, the lower carbonation isn't bothering me, but I could see how it could improve with a little bit more.
Yeah. This one, because, you know, we don't send it off to the lab before we bottle it. We have had batches of it that were... very spritzy. And again, this particular bottle seems to be particularly low, because I had a bottle the other day that was had a lot more carbonation.
A lot more.
Than this one. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't mind it in this setting. I would want more carbonation if I was having it with food, like
Absolutely.
You mentioned. Just a little more effervescent to help the palate.
Absolutely.
But as a sipper like this, no problem at
yep.
all. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you were, if I've done my research correctly, you were a lawyer in your former life.
Yeah, you're not supposed to tell anyone.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I guess, what got you into brewing? Like, specifically...
Drinking beer?
Yeah, is that it?
I mean, basically, you know, I started... Tim Clifford and I started the brewery together, so it wasn't just me. And before he and I were business partners, we were partners, and we just really got into beer. And you know, we planned trips around brewing. We actually, our first homebrew kit we bought in, we were living in Charleston, South Carolina, in the later 1990s.
Okay.
And it was all malt extract at that time.
Sure, yeah.
So we were making disgusting malt extract beers
in
our apartment. And then we sort of put it down for a while, but we always, the brewing piece of it, but we always loved the drinking of beer and always sought out, you know, all the best beers we could find. And then we went to grad school, and then Tim actually started working after grad school at one of your sponsors, Williams Brewing.
Oh, yeah.
And worked there for a long time and was really in charge of doing a lot of test brewing for them. And so that sort of reignited for him, at least, the brewing component of the passion. The drinking passion we had sort of maintained through all of that time. But that was like in 2003, 2004, somewhere around there.
Okay.
And so that was what sort of, you know, started the whole brewery. And not a lot of people were, you know, we started making a lot of mixed fermentation beers at our brewery early on, and not a lot of people were home brewing them at the time.
Right. Yeah.
And so there wasn't a lot of information out there about how to make these beers. But people like Tommy and Vinny, mm-hmm. in particular, you know, were so helpful and provided so much knowledge to homebrewers
right.
about how to make mixed fermentation beers at home. So we just had carboys, like, we lived in Oakland at the time. We had carboys all over our apartment with various experiments happening.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even, and when did Sante open first?
We opened in 2012.
12,
so
okay.
we started making beer in 2011. But, you know, our first beers out of the gate were an IPA, of course. But we had a Belgian style triple, and we had mixed fermentation saison actually in the tanks at the time that we opened. It just those take a long time to make,
so of course.
We didn't come right out of the gate with those.
Tough way to start.
Yeah. Actually, honestly, I think we started with four beers, but it was a different time then.
It was
people
different,
were a lot more forgiving in 2012 than they are now.
And frankly, buying more, experimenting more with beer,
yes.
right? Yeah, anything new was like, sure, I'll take it.
Totally.
And now. Boy, anything new, you got to prove to them that you went and got the best hops in the world and that you're the coolest person in the world. Like, yeah. It's gotten a little tougher.
Yeah, it's much different.
So you guys, though, clearly were most inspired by the Belgian traditions, though?
Yeah. I mean, I think, I mean, really Saison in particular.
Okay.
So, like, you know, we're drinking a Belgian, more of a Blondale style right now, but Saisons in particular were just the style that we were hop heads prior to that. You know, we drank a ton of IPA. My first favorite beer ever was Liberty Ale way back when, which they never called an IPA, but all know Anchor Liberty Ale was, which is what I could get in South Carolina when we lived in South Carolina. But Saison really, once we sort of discovered Saison, it became just this really interesting journey of flavor for us. And, you know, they're very simple flavors, but they're very, again, sort of food focused, really easy to drink with food. There were so many interesting ones coming out of Belgium. I know Fantôme these days is, you know, fun and can be hit or miss, but there was sort of this like amazing period of time where Fantôme beers were just like hitting on every mark. DuPont, of course, was
wonderful
very
beer.
Inspirational. Yeah, I mean, to this day. It was funny. We actually held a Saison event at my new Oakland location during Beer Week. And I thought, okay, no one's going to come to a Saison event because, like, you know, people don't drink Saison.
Yeah.
But it was our busiest event of the entire week. It
really?
Was great.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean, I brought in great beers from other sort of more modern takes on the Saison style. Fair Isle out of Washington, who are doing great Saisons right now.
Okay.
If you're not drinking them, you should be.
Okay.
They're wonderful. Just sort of their base Saison, the Madame Argal, I believe it's called, which is, I think, named after a flower.
Okay.
Is fantastic. So we had them. We had Keeping Together, who is Avery Swanson. The former head brewer from Jester King.
Nice.
And we had Corey King from Side Project. He actually came out and brought some of his Saisons. So we had some more modern ones, but then we threw all the classics on too.
Wow.
And it was really fun to kind of have this like classic Belgian list along with these newer Saison brewers.
Even the Belgians, I think, would say you're crazy
that
it wouldn't work. But I'm so glad it worked. Yeah.
Packed.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. It sounds incredibly educational and fun.
Yeah, it was really fun. I was so happy to see so many people out drinking Saison on a Saturday in February.
Absolutely. Yeah, I can see that, actually. It's such an interesting beer that new drinkers will think it's new. Oh, what's this new style that you're talking about? That's great. Well, you mentioned Oakland, so it's a good time to talk about some of your growth since you've opened. So Capitola was your first brewery?
Yep, Capitola's where the brewery is, still to this day. We started, there are 5 units in this big building. We were unit 103 when we started, literally just unit 103.
Okay.
Which is tiny.
Yeah.
Like less than like 3,000 square feet probably.
Wow.
And we're now units 101 through 105. So we have the whole building now sort of as tenants moved out. We
just kept taking
over their spaces. So we kind of have the whole unit. It's not a romantic location. We're at an industrial park end of a frontage road.
Right. It's still a great spot though. The tasting room's beautiful.
Room's great.
Yeah.
My COVID patio is beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
Hopefully the city will let me keep
Hang on to that COVID patio.
I know my COVID patio is amazing. Yeah. We repurposed all of our pallets into flower planters.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. I gotta visit and look this up. Always looking for ideas.
But it's fun back there actually because we it is a destination, obviously, and when you get back there, you kind of feel like you found something, and it's kind of private back there. Mm-hmm. So anytime we have an anniversary celebration or party of sorts, we have it back there. So that was the original. 5 years after that, we opened another tap room, more sort of centrally located in town in Santa Cruz.
Okay.
We called that we needed to sort of differentiate them. We called it the Santa Cruz Portal because it's across the street from El Portal Park. And it's just kind of become known as the Portal.
Nice.
That one has a food component, which has turned out to be great. But honestly, I did not want to have food.
But is it not food that you manage?
It was. So before the pandemic, it was.
Okay.
The city of Santa Cruz would not let me open a tap room without providing, you know, meals, essentially.
Interesting.
So I had to build a kitchen. Chris Pester was our head, managed our kitchen at the time. And the food was very good. But then pandemic happened. Unfortunately, all those people sort of went away, mm-hmm. except Chris. Mm-hmm. And when we were getting ready to reopen, Tim and I had made the decision that we didn't want to manage the kitchen anymore. So I have a great Detroit-style pizza vendor making pizza in the kitchen there. And he's killing it. People love the pizza. He's busy all the time. It brings us business. It really is a win. I mean, it's another business partnership, so you do have to contend with that. But it's been a win-win for us.
That's great.
Yeah, and he's like he worked at Michelin star restaurants before, and now he's making pizza, which is pretty fun. So the pizza's pretty.
I bet it's pretty good.
It's really good.
I bet he's also very particular.
Sorry, Todd.
It's okay. He knows it. He must know it by now. You don't get to work that way.
He told
me
one time that he's always going to do things the hard way.
Hey, at least he's honest. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's fantastic and it's been good. And it's been really interesting to sort of see people's expectations of what kind of experiences they want to have post-pandemic. And I do think that having a food component is really helpful in a way that prior to the pandemic, I think people didn't seem to care about it as much.
Yeah.
But now they really sort of want to have that whole experience in one place.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say it that way because I guess I hadn't really thought about it, but I think that's the same here.
Yep.
I thought it was because in my particular location, we've lost about 3 restaurants around me and we have a pretty limited menu. Yep. You can have full meals here, but it's limited. We just have a little prep kitchen.
Yep.
But yeah, I guess maybe it's not just that we've lost restaurants around. I do think that you're right. People kind of want more of a one-stop shop.
They do.
They're not spending 4 hours out anymore.
No.
It's just a quick outing, right?
No, because now they have Netflix and Hulu and all the things.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So I think people want to go out. They want to spend maybe a couple hours at one place.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. drink, eat, do all the things, and then they're going to go home and do what they do.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's just been an observation that I've had.
Yeah, yeah.
Post-pandemic.
Post-pandemic, yep. Yeah. Okay, and then you've just opened a third location.
Yes. Yeah. June of last year, we opened in the old Trappist location in Oakland.
I love that spot.
We were talking before the show.
Yeah.
I lived just up the street from that spot when they opened, which was back in 2007.
Okay, yeah.
When Chuck and Aaron opened that place. And I don't know if you remember, it was just like this narrow little shotgun that it didn't have the side room with the bigger space. It didn't even have a patio. It was just this tiny little spot. I mean, it could maybe hold like 20 people.
Yeah.
Nicole Ernie was the one of the original bartenders there. And she would hold beer classes. And it was just this really exciting, the East Bay, at least Oakland, you know, we had, you know, Cato's and we had Ben and Nick's and we had some of these, you know, places where you'd hang out, but we didn't really have like this, like a Belgian beer focused bar. And so it was so exciting when it opened. So I've always loved that place. And so when I had the opportunity to take over the space, to be completely honest, I was not looking to have another tap room.
Okay.
You know, I was sort of at a part like, this is, you know, things are working, you know, running tap rooms is,
yeah,
you know, not it's great, but it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
And, but I just really felt like, because of the history and sort of tradition of beer there, I really wanted to preserve it.
Yeah.
And if you've been to the space, I mean, we definitely sort of made it ours, but you'll walk in and you know it's a Trappist.
Oh, that was my next question, because I haven't been yet. Forgive me. But
yes.
Yeah, okay. So it's still, yeah. And that's how you want it to be.
Yeah. I mean, we did have to take down, you know, it's so funny to see how, you know, people's likes around decor have changed. All the old dusty beer bottles that we all used to love to put up on our shelves, people don't like that anymore.
No, it's
that's like clutter now.
Yeah.
To people, it's, you know, it's like hoarding.
Yeah.
And so we did have to remove, you know, the Trappist had a crazy collection of beer bottles that were just sort of displayed all around the place. So we sort of took down a lot of that stuff and made it a cleaner space, but it's still very much feels like a blend of us and the Trappist. And
that's awesome.
Was what we were trying to do. I
and
wanted
still
to
has
make
the side room
yeah,
too.
Kind of
still
has
the side room. Yeah. Yeah. And Aaron, Chuck, I think Aaron bought the business from Chuck years ago, mm-hmm. or a certain number of years ago. So I just dealt with Aaron, and he had actually reached out to me to say, hey, you know, like, I'm looking at doing something else. Is this something that you would be interested in? He built that space out. He and Chuck did with their own hands. And so he really wanted to make sure that someone took it over who would take care with it.
Sure. Yeah. And you can't pass up that opportunity even if you didn't feel like you were quite ready.
Yeah,
for
I wasn't ready.
Yeah.
not quite ready.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. But I would have done the same. I mean, it's just such a cool building. I like the location.
Yep.
We were saying all downtowns are a little difficult right
they
now,
are.
So that might be tough. But yeah, it's also tough to just keep putting things on hold, isn't it?
It is.
Sometimes you just got to go for it.
You just got to go for it. Yeah. Yeah. I have a great staff there. One of the best things that I not even inherited, because he obviously made the choice, but the manager who had managed the Trappist for years, he came along with me. And, you know, I live in Santa Cruz. I come to Oakland. I usually try to come 1 or 2 days a week. That doesn't always get to happen. But without Ruben Dominguez, that place would not run.
Wow.
So big shout out to Ruben.
That's
who,
great.
Kills it at that location.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And was it a fairly quick transition from the Trappist closing and you acquiring it?
You know,
since you didn't have to do too much build out.
Yeah, they closed New Year's Eve 2021 was their last day in business. And honestly, the only thing that held things up were the ABC. It just sort of, for whatever reason, the ABC was in the process of transitioning where applications went from local offices to Sacramento, and we kind of got wrapped up in all that. So
I see.
ABC took a long time, but other than that, it was, you know, it's pretty much just me and Ruben in there.
Yeah.
You know, taking down old dusty bottles and
figuring it out. Well, when I heard about that, I was both jealous and happy because I just thought you were a perfect fit too. When I heard about it, I was like, okay, yeah, Sante's probably an even better fit than the Hop Grenade. That's that's a good fit.
Well, because we have this, you know, we make all kinds of beer, but you know, honestly, since our love is saison and Belgian style beers, you know, they really does have that European vibe to it. You know, all the tap handles, everything's from Belgium. It's it just feels very European, so it felt like a good fit in that way.
Yeah, and to me, it's your brand, but with a little different twist than your other locations too, because of that, because it's a bit more Belgian, a bit more European than your others, right?
So. And as a result, we, you know, it's been really interesting to see what beers sell at different locations.
Oh yeah,
and with pizza, I mean, we sell IPA out the yin yang, right?
Okay,
because
yeah.
that's just what people are drinking with pizza. I mean, we sell Belgian style beer too, but in Oakland, I think because there just was that history there, the mixed fermentation beers, anything Belgian style moves, I mean, it just flies off the shelves basically.
Okay.
So it's been kind of fun to sort of see you know, what different drinkers are, you know, what drinkers are drinking at different locations.
And also for you to be able to, not just fun to find that out, but for you to be able to move different types of beer.
Absolutely.
And it's, you know, way more diversified that way.
Way more diversified.
So that's cool.
Yeah.
Well, and the other thing, and this is why I'm mad at myself, I haven't been there yet. The thing I liked a lot about the Trappist is I can BART there super easy.
Super easy. 12th Street BART.
Yeah. It's one of the mm-hmm. only great beer spots that I can think of that's right near a BART. I mean, yep. there are others, but like, yeah, so that one's just a quick jaunt from here.
Yep.
So I'll be there soon. Yep.
And I'm going to give a shout out to my friends at Cellar Maker because they're opening up a spot in Jack London, like, I think any moment.
Now,
they
right.
had like yeah. a yeah. bottle sale there this last weekend. So, and there are already great breweries down in Jack London already. And obviously, you've got Ghost Town over in West Oakland. So that whole Oakland area is really starting to be a pretty awesome beer destination.
I agree. We did look at a spot right across from. I think it was right across from the Fox Theater.
Yeah.
That was in January of 2019. No. January 2020. Forgive me. Oh. So, and it was a turn, like almost turnkey. Yeah. We had closed our Colorado location and we're kind of, I still have all of that shit sitting in a container. So we had enough to open a new place. And I was like, I think maybe we should do this. And at the last minute, I got cold feet and I pulled out. And I couldn't be luckier because that was January of 20.
Yeah.
I went to New Zealand for hop harvest in February and boom, pandemic.
Yep. I was supposed to go to New Zealand in March for hop harvest, like 3 days after the world shut down.
Oh, man. Yeah. Heartbreaking.
Yeah. Well, I stayed there a month, so it shut down while I was there. I've told this story too many times on the air, so I'll tell you off the air if you want to hear it. Yep. But I did get stuck there. But I just remember the sigh of relief that I didn't sign that lease.
Absolutely.
Although now, I like you're saying, I really love Oakland and as a beer spot. And I'm happy that there are still breweries growing there rather than just shutting down, right? Mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm, I think there's a lot of hope for the beer scene in Oakland.
Yep. The whole Temescal neighborhood is killing it right now.
Oh yeah.
You know, I'm in no small part because of Temescal Brewing. Mm-hmm, area around the Fox Theater is killing it right now.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Damn COVID.
Damn COVID. Yeah.
Let me get us to a quick break.
Okay.
We're going to take a break. That way we can get some more beer in our glass. We are hanging out with Adair from Sante Adarius, and we will be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Welcome back to the session. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. We're still here talking to Adair from Sante Adarius, and we've got a new beer in our glass. This one, an actual mixed fermentation beer, right?
Yeah, this is a beer called Past Remembered. This was one of our club beers last year. We have since made it again. It's a barrel-aged saison that we dry hop pretty heavily with a bunch of aged hops. So you get that sort of cheesy, funky, almost lambic-y nose and flavor profile. Believe it, like I feel like the dry hopping even kind of hits the flavor.
Yeah.
So this is my favorite club beer of last year and one of my favorite beers. To me, it's kind of got the best things about Saison and the best things about lambic kind of put together, that sort of cheesy quality, but with a lighter tartness profile than a traditional lambic would.
Yeah, but the old hops, that is a traditional method, right?
It is.
Yeah. Do you age them yourselves or do
no,
you buy?
No, we buy them aged.
Interesting.
Yeah, you have to hunt. Yeah, we've had to hunt for them.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, what an interesting thing because it takes up room in somebody's warehouse, right? But I wondered about that. This is a great beer.
Are the hops like pelletized aged?
No, they're
whole cone.
They're whole cone. Yeah, they're whole cone.
Interesting.
Yeah, they're
so
whole,
they're just, whole but they're stored like cool still, right?
No.
Just warm.
Frequently, people, I've seen them store. Jester King does it themselves actually, and they store them like in a barn and rafters essentially.
Oh, really?
So sort of the idea is you just sort of store them and get them to kind of pick up whatever
Yeah.
Is in the, so no, not stored cold.
Oh, okay.
At all, traditionally. So we actually still have, we have some from the last batch, and we're just storing them. They're not in our walk-in with all our other hops.
Just leave them. And there's no fruit in this beer.
There's no fruit in this beer.
Yeah, because it, well, like you said with the last beer, Teresa, you get some of those, like, you know, stone fruit coming out.
Yeah.
But this one, so much even more.
Really more, yeah.
Yep, no fruit.
Wow. And do you guys have like a house?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like
our house culture is has a lot of stone fruit characteristics. A lot of peach, nectarine, sometimes sweet tarty even. But this is the sort of house culture that we, that all of our beers have this, all of our mixed fermentation beers have this culture in them.
Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is just delicious.
I know. Oh,
it's beautiful beer.
I'd sign up for the club for that.
Oh, 100%. I'm like, I'm taking notes.
If you're listening right now, you can go to rusticales.com and you can see at least the probably a menu of the beers we're talking about and see if you can sign up for the club. Yeah, that's great.
I mean, it makes all the sense in the world why not everyone does these kind of beers. But like, I feel when you get into beer and like you said, you become a total hop head because you're exploring all those hop flavors and then you start exploring delicate flavors. And I swear all roads lead to Belgium. Like once you really start appreciating Belgian beer, it's like you've found your way through craft beer. But like this is just so
thank
awesome.
You. Yeah, I love this is probably my favorite beer that we put out last year. Mm-hmm. Club or not club.
Okay.
It's not one of our, you know, our fruited beers are the ones that get all the attention, not from club members necessarily, but just from the general public, I would say. But this is really what I like to drink. I like to drink just like a nice, delicate saison.
Yeah,
that's my jam.
Well, and also with this one, it's not too puckering. It's not too acidic or sour. That's really tamped down, I think. Do you have a person who's in charge of your mixed fermentation program specifically, or is it sort of?
No, it's sort of spread. We have four. We have four brewers. Chris Pester, who we're going to sort of go back in time to when he worked in my kitchen. Chris, who I had gotten from a bakery, loves all types of fermentation. He worked at a he made, you know, naturally leavened bread was sort of his thing for a while, and then he came and managed my kitchen. Well, when the pandemic hit, I didn't have a kitchen anymore, and so I didn't want to let him go, so I was just sort of finding odd things for him to do. And then we ultimately needed another brewer, and Chris wanted to sort of try out for the role. And he's been great at it, and because of his specific interest in, you know, fermentation specifically. He loves this program. It's just sort of like when he has the opportunity, this is his baby. But honestly, Tim built the mixed fermentation program, and we're all just sort of managing it
and
now.
guiding it along now.
Okay. You know, we know what the flavors are supposed to taste like. We do have our culture banked. If anything ever goes crazy and everything starts to taste terrible,
you can restart it.
Yeah, because you can get off the rails. You know,
absolutely.
and
relatively quickly, I would think.
Pretty quickly. Yeah. No, we dump plenty. We have dumped plenty of beer over the years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you guys? So you have a big old barrel room, I would imagine.
We do. Yeah. Okay. So I have the five units I was talking about. One of them, pretty much the whole warehouse. Part of that unit is all mixed fermentation barrels. And then we have a separate area where we keep clean barrels.
Okay.
Different room.
And for tasting and blending, you guys do that as a team then to figure out? Yeah,
typically.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, typically. I mean, we have some brands, obviously, that you know, we know what they're going to be. But, you know, the club has been really fun for us because it allows us to be experimental and to... put things in bottles that were like, let's just see how this turns out. Like maybe it'll be a club beer, maybe it won't, maybe it'll be something else. And so that's been a really fun program for us. And a number of beers that we've made for the club then go on to be, you know, regular releases.
Okay, nice. Because they're such a hit that you can replicate it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I mean, we've had some club beers that we can't replicate, and of course, those are the ones that everybody's like trying to find.
Yeah, exactly.
Can we get this beer? No, you can't get that beer. I don't know. We don't have to.
Black market somewhere.
Yeah, they were like orphan barrels of Saison that we blended together. Yeah, right.
I love that though. That's fun. I mean, it's everyone chasing their whales though.
Yeah, it's so funny.
It's so annoying for us, like trying to learn how to do this because we're like sitting in the talk, like it's, the room is packed. Everyone's like, drop some nuggets, and they're like, we just put these things together and we just put that same thing in the barrel and
it worked.
Yeah.
It's so hard. You have to earn it, and then even when you earn it, like, you're still dumping tons of beer.
We dump tons of beer. Yeah. I mean, every year we dump a decent amount of beer. I mean, I think if you're not dumping beer, then you're probably putting out stuff that doesn't taste very good.
Yeah, true.
Because not every batch of beer turns out exactly the way that you want it to.
Especially these beers. Yeah.
Especially these beers.
Well, and we've all had beers from those breweries that are not dumping out enough beer.
Yes, we have. Yeah.
And you know what's bummer about that, too, is it's not good for the industry either.
It's not. And I'm going to get on my little horse about mixed fermentation beer. It's really, I think, was bad for mixed fermentation because I think a lot of people sort of jumped into that and didn't understand the fermentation and just thought that if you had any sour profile, then it was a good beer.
Right.
And it wasn't necessarily a good fermentation. And I think a lot of people had a lot of bad beer. You know, we're lucky in that I think we came sort of before that happened. And so we had already built a reputation that we only put out stuff that we stand behind. But I think that, if you were trying to sort of build a mixed fermentation program now, you know, these beers don't sell particularly well.
Right.
These are not, these did not pay for my Subaru Crosstrek.
Right.
Just very fancy.
Just, you know.
Like 2016 Subaru Crosstrek. So not pay for those. No.
Yeah.
These are just sort of a labor of love. And
right.
Yeah.
It's funny because there was a moment that it looked like these were going to make or break people, right? The price of Cantillon had quadrupled. Like, everyone was getting in on it. But then people kind of messed it up.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, it turns out it's hard.
Yeah, a lot of people mess up.
And I think people tried to take shortcuts. You know, people were just quick souring stuff. You know, they're throwing lactic acid at things. They're, you know, doing, you know, there are all these other quick souring techniques that people were using, getting, you know, all kinds of barfy flavors.
Yeah.
And if you have one of those, and like, that might have been your entry point because the price point was where you were willing to kind of take a chance. If that was what you tasted first, you're not going to come back and try something at a higher price point. Because, you know, these beers take us a minimum of a year usually.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, that's an expensive proposition
in
a place like California where one of your main costs is real estate.
Yeah. Well, and it's a good point about the entry level beer too. For me, for my first sour beer, and I was broke. I had just started the Brewing Network. All my money, you know, I was living on a credit card, right? And then I saw the price of this bottle of Cantillon.
Yeah.
A small bottle, by the way. $375. You know, and it was like $40, right? It was me and my girlfriend at the time. But I just thought, I have to see why. I have to see what the hype is about.
Yeah.
And it's the best decision I ever made. Like, it's probably still the best $40 I ever spent. I mean, it sent me on a sour beer journey.
Right.
Right? Because it was so delicious. It was of such high quality, right? They're, of course, legendary.
Right.
But I think you're right. If I had tried Schmo's Brewery Sour at that time in my life, I also would have been like, nope, no sours for me.
Yep, like, these are gross.
Yeah,
I don't want to come back and have any more of these.
Right. So I guess I just sort of reiterate what you said and bring that up again to hammer it home to any new listeners. If you're gonna try a sour beer, don't cheap out.
Don't cheap out.
You know,
if you cheap out, it probably means that they did not ferment the flavor profile, the tart or sour flavor profile. They probably took some type of a quick solution or added lactic acid to it or, you know, citric acid or whatever to make it sour, but didn't actually ferment the flavors. And I think what makes these beers taste unique is the fermentation of the flavors and the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it takes a long time to coax this type of a flavor out of the beer. So you can't get that in a in a 14-day fermentation.
Right. Yeah. You can get something.
You'll get something.
But you're not getting that.
You'll get something. Yeah. And so that's part of what you're paying for is the time.
Right.
That it takes to make.
Sure.
To
that make makes sense. Beers. No, yeah. That's a wonderful, wonderful beer.
Yeah. Thank you.
Well, speaking of learning things and taking time, let's talk a bit about the California Craft Beer Summit. So it's back in person this year. Talked about it with Julian on the last show, too. I'm excited that it's back.
Me, too.
Yeah, the speaker list is incredible. I'm actually helping I'm helping Chris White with a talk with him.
Great.
So that's good. And we're
Are
gonna,
you moderating?
Well, in a sense, but it's just me and him. So it's more of like a fireside chat type thing, I guess.
Oh, because you don't know how to do that.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah, they asked me, I was like, yeah, so I just hang out with my friend Chris and talk.
You just talk to him?
Okay.
Yeah, that works.
I think we're going to, although I do like a couple of our topics, I think we're going to talk about, it sounds a little egocentric for the West Coast, but we're going to talk about like what makes West Coast beers different. Why are West Coast IPAs the best IPA? I know you listeners.
I'm right there with you.
I know, like, I have listeners everywhere, and they're like,
I'll be in the audience.
Yeah, they're like, here he goes, Justin and his California beers, whatever. But what I'm excited about is to hear Chris's scientific perspective on that.
Yeah.
Because if we're going to talk about the West Coast IPAs and what makes them different, we're going to talk about yeast, right? So, I'm pretty excited to do that with him.
That's exciting.
So that'll be great. There's all kinds of great speakers. It's put on, of course, by the California Craft Brewers Association, which you are a former chair.
I am a former chair.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was a chair. Oh, I got to be chair in 2020.
Oh, good for you.
Oh, what fun.
Wow.
That was fun when we got to lay off half the staff.
Oh, no.
Yeah. My gosh.
Not a fun year. I mean, I didn't get to lay, but yes.
Yeah. It was happening.
Yeah, it was happening. Yeah.
Okay.
The California Craft Brewers Association, most people, particularly consumers, I think, or, you know, or people who are just sort of, you know, a beer drinker or whatever, don't sort of understand what trade associations do to make the things that they love happen.
Yeah.
And the reason we have such a vibrant craft beer community and why you get to choose from so many different craft beers in this state is in part because of the California Craft Brewers Association. I mean, obviously we have a lot of great brewers here.
Yeah.
But because of the way that the CCBA has lobbied the legislature on behalf of those craft brewers has allowed us to have a lot of the privileges that have kept the small guys in business. So that's why we can have tap rooms. Some states you can't have a tap room if you can't ship to your consumer in some states.
Right.
There are a lot of things you can't do that that you can do in California, and that is in very large part because of the California Craft Brewers Association. So I've been honored to be on the board for almost 9 years.
9 years.
Almost 9 years.
Yeah, you were saying you're about to
term out at the end of this year, which makes me feel kind of old.
Oh, no.
Actually, because when I started, I have to tell you, when I started, Natalie Chalurzo was on the board. And I'd only owned the brewery for a few years at that point. We'd only been open for a few years. I think you have to have been in business for at least 3 years or something to be on the board. And so I was like so starstruck of, you know, Natalie and David Walker was on the board. And I mean, all these people who I'd really looked up to as just sort of a beer nerd, honestly.
Right.
And so I got to sit on this board with them, which I think was in no small part because I had been a lawyer and they needed new bylaws.
Like, let's go to Adair.
Yes. So I got that was one of my first assignments. Helping to rewrite
casually
the bylaws.
Put that in front of you.
Yes.
Welcome to the board,
yes.
Adair.
Yes.
Here's your binder.
With Chris Kramer, I want to give all due respect. With Chris Kramer from Carl Strauss, who is also a dear friend.
Okay.
But it's been like so cool to just be on the board with all of these amazing people in the industry and, you know, to get to know them better. Natalie is a dear friend now. So
nice. Very nice.
Yeah.
Wonderful people. It is great. And by the way, everybody should participate in their local organizations because it is super helpful. The speaker list is amazing. You mentioned some of them already, but David Walker is going to be speaking
this
year.
Opening session this year. If you have not heard David Walker speak, you are missing out. Not only is he one of the most sort of well-versed people in the English language I've ever heard, but he also has an English accent.
So he does.
There's that, too.
I like to call him the second best-looking man in beer when I see him. He has the second best hair.
He has great hair.
He's not horrible to look at.
He knows that I say this of him, by the way. So. Yeah. But he's going to be speaking there. Vinny and Natalie both are speaking.
Yep. Ken Grossman. Ken Grossman, who... Mm-hmm. None of us would be here without Ken Grossman.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, you get to hear Ken Grossman, which is pretty cool.
I'd buy your ticket. We should stop now. And just if you need another reason to get a ticket to this summit, then I don't know what's wrong with you. I think my old friend Doug from Society is speaking. And yes, he's on the board with y'all.
He is on the board. He was just reelected to the board. Yep.
Nice. He's a smart guy. I make fun of him a lot, but he's a darn smart dude.
He's a very smart guy.
Yeah. Ryan Fields from Wild Fields is going to be speaking.
Yeah, I'm going to be listening to that talk.
You got to go listen to Ryan.
So yeah. I'm embarrassed to say I have not had one of their beers, but I've only been hearing the most fantastic things about their beers.
I honestly haven't either.
Yeah.
So I've been
hearing amazing things about their beers.
We carry their beer here as much as we can, but he's recently... He's been taking the award ceremonies by storm. Yep. He got something like 3 gold medals in the World Beer Cup.
Wow.
I didn't even know it was possible.
Well, he got
four
medals. I don't know if they're all gold, but...
At least 3 of them were gold.
Yeah. Wow.
And I was like, has anybody ever won that many gold medals?
Wow.
Same at the Great American Beer Festival. So if you want a good educational seminar, you go sit in on Ryan's.
Yeah. Yep. The cool thing is there is kind of a blend of like more... And shout out to Julian, who is on the educational committee this year, who helped put together the seminars together, who has a ton of technical knowledge. Julian from Beechwood, who was on last week.
Yeah.
But there are a ton of technical seminars for technical brewing. But then, you know, there's stuff about marketing and business and legislative updates, you know, all the stuff you want to know, basically, if you're in this industry.
Or even if you're thinking about getting into the industry.
Exactly.
So when I went the first year of this thing too, and my takeaway was really that, like, oh, this isn't just for people already in it.
Right.
I would have been remiss if I missed out on all the information getting into the industry.
Yep.
So, and it's happening right here in Sacramento, so it's easy to get to. Who else is on here? Oh, they didn't put my picture up. I bet David Walker said they're not allowed to put my picture up on there. David, I'm gonna talk to you.
David is the nicest guy too.
He's so nice.
He is so nice.
Who did I? Oh yeah, there he is. You know who I never thought I would be interested in listening to? Bart Watson.
Oh, Bart Watson. Are you kidding? He's amazing.
Because I don't really care much about numbers and economics. I listened to him do a talk at the Great American Beer Festival. He was the most entertaining, best speaker I heard all week.
He's fantastic.
He's
wonderful.
Great. He did agree to come on the show. I have to bug him about that.
Oh, he did when he's in town the summit.
I'll have him on Zoom or whatever.
Okay.
I didn't. It's my fault. I haven't followed up yet. But he's speaking there, and yeah, if you think you don't like numbers or economics, you go listen to Bart.
Yep.
He's so fascinating, and also just I think a genius.
Yeah, and he has a Bay Area, so he's with the Brewers Association, but he has a California connection. I think he's either Berkeley, Stanford. He's somewhere around here. He went to school to get all those numbers in his brain. Yeah,
probably Stanford, if I had to guess. This guy, he's really great. So the speaker list is just awesome. By the way, what did I say? You can go to CaliforniaCraftBeer.com.
Yep, or cacraftbeersummit.com as well. There are two places that you can go pick up tickets.
Yeah. And so you're not speaking this year.
I'm not. I have spoken in the past, but I am doing some speaker introductions.
Oh, very nice.
This year, but I'm not. I will not be speaking this year.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's some cool social events happening all around it.
Yep.
So I can't go the whole week, but I am not missing Monday because there's a bunch of cool events. There's one at Drake's Barn, which I'm excited about.
Have you been there before?
I have.
Yeah, that's a cool location.
That's very cool.
It's another one I'm jealous of. I told you I'm a very jealous person.
Yeah, it's very, I mean, the architecture, it's like just architecturally stunning.
Yeah. And so, and I know John Martin, who's the, and really, really fond of him. I look up to him.
I'm right there with you.
I always say this, he's the mentor. He doesn't know he's my mentor, but he has been.
Yeah.
But anyhow, he opens that place. I read about it. And my first thought is, you're insane. That place is too big and too, that's not going to work. And then that was immediately followed by jealousy when I realized John's smarter than I am, yeah, and everything he touches seems to work.
John's smarter than all of us.
I think he is. Yeah. Just merged, just bought Bear Republic.
Yeah.
I thought that was another smart
move. I have a
great
story about John Martin. When we were first getting started with our one fermenter, not kidding.
One fermenter.
Mm-hmm. We visited John Martin. We knew him just socially and just sort of through beer because we were just, you know, always around beer. And he took us to his warehouse and he let us borrow 3 Grundys for as long as we needed them. He basically said, we're not using these. They're in my warehouse. Just use them. I mean, and this is, you know, honestly, I'm like getting teared up about it. This is like what I love about the beer industry.
Yeah.
And just, you know, use them until you're not using them anymore.
Yeah.
And so we held on to those things for a couple of years, then we gave them back.
Ah, so nice.
Yeah.
So nice. When I was going to open an Oakland location, it was going to be near Drake's dealership.
Yes.
So I reached out to John, just, you know, kind of saying, hey, what do you think? And not only did he give me his approval, he gave me so much information. Yep. He's like, you really need to think about this and this, and that you need to talk to this person, and was so... although then I didn't do it. Maybe that was his plan all along to stop me from.
No, it wasn't.
I'm kidding. No, he was so open.
No, he's so open.
Yeah.
No, he's so he loves this industry and he loves the people in it. And he's always been like a mentor, I think is the word that you used. And he really has been a mentor, I think, to a lot of people in this industry.
Yes.
So drink Drake's beer too. Cause
the drink Drake's beer.
Drink
that's
Drake's
right.
beer.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm going to go to the barn. And then there's like another after party after that, which is my jam. I love after parties.
After.
Yeah. Not the after where we end up in a hotel room until 4 a.m. with 10 drunk people, Teresa.
No.
More than like legit after party where you still, you know, you go back to bed at midnight or something.
Yeah, yeah.
You can still Uber home and like...
Right, like, yeah, you're not in too much trouble.
Yeah,
that Drake's party is going to be rad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just such a cool spot.
Yeah, there's food there too, I think, too. So
yes.
There is food.
Yeah.
I take notes every time I go there because their patio is just... so amazing. And it's even amazing when it's 100 degrees in Sacramento because they've got like all these microclimates going on. Like
yes.
They have the best sprayers in the world. Like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of jealousy too.
Yeah.
You're not alone in your jealousy.
It's such a cool spot.
It's a great spot.
Well, go to californiacraftbeer.com and check it out. Come join us. Hang out with us at the after things. Do the educational seminars and make yourselves better brewers and better citizens of the brewing industry too. Okay. Well, here's what I think we're going to do. We're going to take another quick break here. Because we've got, actually, we have 2 or 3 more beers to try next.
Okay.
And then I want to, if you're up for it, I want to play my new random question game. It's not really a game. Just random questions so we can get to know you outside of beer. Are you down?
Yeah. I mean, just be nice. Be nice.
Shit.
Yeah. We have a beer called Bernice. It's like our flagship Saison Bernice. And we have a shirt where we black out the R. So it's just be nice.
Be nice. Very nice.
Yeah.
I will be nice. Most guests, I don't make that promise to you, but I'll promise you. I'll do that. But Teresa, I might make you play along too.
I can't wait.
Okay. All right. Hang in there. You're listening to The Session, and we'll be right back with more from Adair. Welcome back to The Session. Thank you for hanging out with us today. We are still speaking with Adair and having a very nice time, if I don't say so myself.
Yeah.
I agree. I second.
Enjoying some good beer. Saw some people out at the bar who showed up, I think, just for a chance to meet you or taste your beer, Adair.
Cool.
I just saw that. So it's always nice to see people come out on a Monday in the restaurant bar industry, isn't it?
Yes.
So this show has
sometimes you get industry people, though, which is pretty fun because, you know, a lot of restaurants are closed on Mondays.
Yeah.
So
true.
Mondays are one of those nights that are either like really dead or you have like a bunch of really cool, fun people hanging out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about the couple of beers in our glass and then we'll have some fun with the random questions.
Okay.
We'll start with your IPA, though, right?
Yeah, okay. So I brought 8-3-1 IPA, which we've been making this beer for almost 11 years now.
So since you opened, basically?
Since we opened. This is one of the... I said we had 4 beers on the board when we opened. This was one of them.
Okay.
So old school West Coast IPA. We have tweaked the hop profile a little bit over the years to make it slightly more palatable for today's drinker.
Sure, yeah.
So we've pulled back on the Columbus. Columbus was sort of the star of this, and we've pulled back on that and a little bit. It's still definitely in there. But I think this batch, one of the reasons I brought it is I think this batch of 831 is so good.
It's delicious.
Again, I'm a West Coast IPA fan. This is like traditional West Coast IPA. Citrus, Simcoe, Centennial, and Columbus.
Okay. And you backed off on the Columbus, you said?
It was much more Columbus heavy. So it had a little bit more of that onion character, which honestly, I really like. I'm one of the few people who like Summit hops.
Okay. Yeah.
But today's beer drinker doesn't seem that interested in that flavor profile.
No, but you're the old school brewers, I won't call myself a brewer, but I'm in this class.
Yes.
Yeah, that onion garlic thing.
Yes.
Like, who is Jeremy from Lagunitas has come on here and he's like, oh yeah, we're the brewery that the farms call when they left it on the vine too long. Because they know we want the onion and the garlic and the whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. I like those flavors, but I know everybody, you know, now is a little bit more citrus focused. Yeah. This still has a lot of that sort of pungent hop character from it. I mean, this tastes like an old school IPA to me.
Mm. It's totally my thing too. Mm-hmm. I have a beer that has the exact same hop profile, probably doesn't taste anything the same, but like I could sit here and smell this all
day. Me too. Sort of danky.
Yeah.
But it's not, the malt profile's not old school IPA. It's not like a ton of crystal and stuff.
No. It's not that old school.
Yeah, okay.
No. We definitely, it's mid school. It did have some C40 in it. It just still does a little bit, but we've definitely backed off that on that a little bit too.
Okay.
Just as palates have... as palates have changed a little bit. Yeah.
But I bet this is super popular up in Capitola.
It is pretty popular. Yeah. I don't know that it's our most popular IPA. Again, people tend to want that more citrusy profile. So it's popular for people who love this beer. They love this beer.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's the newer sort of drinker who comes in who's like, what hazy do you have on draft?
Yeah.
This is not something that we would point them to.
Sure.
Because they would not like it very much.
And then this is in cans.
It's in cans. It's
what else are you guys putting in cans?
We put a lot of stuff in cans now, and that is because of the pandemic. Honestly, shout out to the can van. We are not large enough to have a canning line, so they come every other week down to our place. And one of the first things that happened, so we had just started canning a little bit before the pandemic. When I heard the world was shutting down, one of the first things we did was we got the can van scheduled every week for a year.
Oh, wow.
For all of 2020.
That's amazing.
We were basically like, this is like, they're going to book up. We need a way to sell beer. And so we need to lock in dates. So they were coming down every Tuesday during the pandemic because we were only selling beer in cans and bottles, right? Because we were selling it to go. So we just turned 100% to canning during that time period. So we have a lot of brands that are in cans now. We don't keep them around all the time. We kind of rotate through. Again, we're canning every 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the way that timing works out, you know, the tank management on that is sort of complicated, right? Because you have to have, we're usually canning four brands at a time. So you're holding up four tanks for this one canning date because you don't have your own canning line type of a thing. So it's not ideal.
Yeah.
But it's been good. It's been really good for us. And it got us through. And so we just kept doing it. We just sort of backed off. Obviously, we're not doing it every week now, but we backed off a little bit from the canning. But it's great. You know, I think pre-pandemic, people were still getting growlers filled. Nobody. I mean, we still fill them for you, but
yeah,
it's the growler culture is sort of gone.
Yeah.
But cans sort of became the way people take beer home with them now. So,
true.
People come, they want to have a beer there, and then they want to take beer home with them, and this is how they can do it.
Yeah, I always thought that the growler culture was going to be like a game changer. When during the pandemic, they allowed non-manufacturers, me...
Yep, to sell growlers.
Yeah, I was like, oh, now this is going to be great. And if they let us do it after, boy, is it going to be great, like for us. Nope. We definitely went through a ton of growlers during the pandemic, but it died off even before the pandemic was over. Like the very first opening. You know how we open and shut, open like that. We still occasionally get a random person asking us for growlers, but just not much.
Yeah, I mean, we still have, and they're kind of old school people. Yeah. You know, a lot of them are homebrewers. You know, that's just sort of. I mean, I had growlers. I mean, I would collect them from the different breweries I went to. I don't know how I've
thrown away
them in my
crates of growlers.
I know.
Yeah.
I'll probably regret that one day.
I'm guessing Russian Reversal sells a bunch of growlers.
You're right. Yeah, they must.
Yeah, because I still see them there, so they must sell a ton of them. And again, we keep them around. We keep them in stock. If you want to buy one, we have them. If you bring your own, we'll fill it for you.
Nice. Yeah.
But it's definitely that's another thing that the pandemic changed was growler culture.
Yeah. Well, and I didn't know. So even though we buy your beer from time to time, I would drive out, but we were always getting kegs. I'm not our buyer, so he knows better than me. But I didn't know you were doing so much in cans. And now that I do, and now that I can get it in Oakland.
You can get it in Oakland.
I think we'll be getting more Sante cans here.
You can get it in Oakland. Yeah. We do usually four brands every other week. And we try to kind of keep the styles. We try not to do like four IPAs at a time. You know, usually there's an IPA, a lager. Sometimes there's a hazy IPA and a West Coast IPA. So we use two IPAs. But we do try to keep the styles kind of rote. So every time we're putting out something new, there's kind of a mix of beer styles that you're getting in cans.
And are you planning to do more distribution with that?
Possibly. It depends. Okay. I mean, right now we're self-distributing. Mm-hmm. We have a van. We just bought a truck at the end of last year. I have a great delivery guy. I have a new wholesale manager, Zane, who you guys have been working with.
He's the one who helped us out,
That was an employee I lost during the pandemic was my wholesale guy. Mm-hmm. I had Rudy Kuhn, who had worked for Lagunitas forever. You may have known him. Rudy was great. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I wasn't distributing beer, so I lost him during the pandemic, and so we're just sort of rebuilding that part of the business. I feel like we've rebuilt the taproom piece of it, and we're just sort of rebuilding that distribution part of the business. So if we needed to distribute further, like right now, we're basically selling all the beer that we make. So if there was a desire for more people to buy beer, we could probably make a little bit more and distribute it a little bit further.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we'll help with that. We'll promote more. It'd be great to get more beer out.
Great.
Okay. And then the last beer we have, this one we have on draft here at the Hop Grenade, and we probably will for the next week-ish, maybe less.
It's a big beer.
So this one's an Imperial Stout.
It's an Imperial Stout. No oak.
Will to Appease. Mm-hmm. That's what it's called.
Will to Appease. This is a newer beer for us. We have a new head brewer, Drew.
Okay.
Who's fantastic. He is actually off to hop selection in New Zealand tonight.
Oh, nice.
Wow.
Slightly jealous.
Yeah, lucky him.
Lucky him. Yeah. He's going to New Zealand. But this was sort of his brainchild. He is certainly, definitely interested in, we've always made barley wines and imperial stouts, but I think they're more interesting to him than some of the other people we've had around. And so we're definitely doing more of those than we did previously.
Okay.
One of the things we're doing is we're brewing a lot of imperial stouts, barley wines, bigger beers, and we're serving some fresh, and then we're sending some into spirit barrels.
Okay. Yep.
Oh, cool.
So
to age. Yeah.
Yep. To age.
But this one's non-barrel. This is out of stainless.
This is not barrel. This is all stainless. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But part of it went to a barrel.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
How would you describe this beer?
I would describe this beer as it's almost imperial porter flavoring in that there's more chocolate than I think you get sort of a roasted barley flavor. Mm-hmm. To me, I prefer that. Sometimes too much roasted barley for me can taste sort of acrid or burnt. I get more of kind of a round chocolatey vibe from this beer.
I was going to say the same thing that, which sometimes you can get, from barrels too, but since it's not in the barrel. I was thinking, some chocolate, tiny, tiny hint of coconut.
Yeah, absolutely. It's sort of bright on the back end it finishes pretty dry.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a lot of residual sweetness.
Yeah. Which is nice.
Which I like. Again, sort of more old school. I'm not a big fan of.
Well, it's 11.
Sweet.
It's almost 12%.
Almost 12%.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. So super smooth. Mm-hmm. But also, like, it's on the balance, it's a little sweeter rather than bitter.
Right.
Like, it doesn't have bitterness, but it's balanced and dry. So it's still drinkable.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Almost too drinkable.
Yeah.
For 12%. Yeah.
12%. Like I would have said like 9.5. Yeah. So Yeah, it's a big group. But it's big. It's bold.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's unctuous. I feel like it has good mouthfeel.
Mm-hmm.
Unctuous.
It's a good.
What a good descriptor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm going to open a brewery called Unctuous.
Unctuous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good word.
For sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is bold, but the fact that it dries out, like you said, and dissipates makes that just fine.
It does. Yeah. It doesn't make you feel like it's sort of heavy. There's no heaviness on the palate that you're left with.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you, both of you, this question as the brewers in the room. Do the variety of hops matter in a beer like this, or are you just looking for alpha acid of any kind?
I would say no,
yeah,
because the hop flavor doesn't really carry over. It's just a bitterness,
yep,
that you're looking for.
Because I think, yeah, because I think when I was asking questions about the beer, I was thinking, I don't know that I've ever asked a hops question about a beer like this, yep, which led me to think, yeah, maybe they just don't. So you're just, you know, Magnum, like whatever has alpha.
Yep.
In a beer like this, I would say if you have a dry Irish stout or something, like you should use EKG so it comes through as being authentic. Mm. But like this kind of beer, it's
an imperial.
It's so buried.
Yep.
It's hard to tell.
I know somebody who brews their beers at another facility, and when they brew stouts and things, they just sort of use whatever is on hand that will kind of get them the bittering profile that they're looking for. They don't.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
And in fact, you'd probably, if anything, you just want to choose a toned down hop.
Yes.
Like you don't want to go for your Simcoe.
No.
No. Yeah.
Like, it wouldn't make any sense to do so because, like, even if you chose something that was, like, fancy,
yeah,
like, you wouldn't really know. Okay, I mean, well, yeah. I would not know. I can't say there's not a person in the world who might know. But,
right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And honestly, if you hop these too much too with something like that, it's not going to taste very good.
Oh yeah, sure. I mean, yeah. Tropical. Right.
Well, and that's what I meant. Like, is if you got some of those hops that are like catty or diesel-y, yeah, it actually might ruin the beer.
It wouldn't taste very good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this is delicious, and as you said, a little too delicious.
A little too delicious.
Yeah. This might be my nightcap beer while it's still on tap here. We'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The nice thing is once it warms up, it'll honestly probably taste even better.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like with all these beers, like room temperature, like, or like cellar, like wine cellar temperatures.
Okay.
Almost even better.
Yeah. 40s, is that like high 40s?
High 40s, low 50s.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's great beer.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, it is lovely.
Yeah.
All right. Real quick, before we dive into my new fun segment, hey, just want to let you all know that Watermelon Wheat is back at the 21st Amendment. That's right. The last beer is gone and the Watermelon Wheat is back. So go check it out. And I just saw that they have expanded hours at the San Leandro Tap Room. So go to 21stamendment.com, 21st-amendment.com. Check them out. They'll also be at Spring Brews Fest. So you're going to want to come hang out and drink their beer there. But yeah, it's always a sign that this weather is going to leave. I really need it to leave in about a week. And Watermelon Wheat is like bringing in the spring and the summer. But I swear, Adair, I have until the 25th this festival.
25th is pretty good usually, but you know, my birthday was like a week or two ago, and usually by my birthday, things are starting to turn.
Yeah, yeah.
Not this year.
It hasn't happened.
No, it hasn't
and
happened.
And look, I'm trying to be a good Californian. You know, we need it, fine, but I'm just asking for one day.
I think that that's fair.
Okay, yeah.
It's totally fair.
Yeah.
I'm going to doubly ask because we have a wedding at the brewery.
Oh, gosh.
On that same freaking day.
Do you?
Yeah, oh, I swear to God. I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, supposedly it's good luck if it rains on your wedding. I've heard these things.
I will personally run around with an umbrella over your head if you come to Spring Brews Fest and it rains. We can hang.
Well, it's happening, rain or shine.
Yes.
I just really want shine.
Yeah.
Shine would be good.
All right, let's play some random questions, shall we?
Shoot.
Okay. We'll start. What are you super into that nobody really knows about you? Like, it's not public knowledge that you're into this hobby or type of movie or I don't know what. Do you have a super into thing that's kind of...
I do, but I think that I'm so... I mean, I kind of wear things like on my sleeve or, you know, I'm
Yeah, it's all out there, yeah.
So it's like it's mostly out there. I'm like a crazy dog lady.
Okay.
Like really a crazy dog lady. So my staff, if they're listening to this, are like cracking up because they know exactly that this what this is all about.
Like you have 10 or just that you love them so much?
No, I would have 10, but I have a crazy dog who is a bitch.
Okay.
I love her very much, but she cannot have other dogs. But I do volunteer at the animal shelter.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So I give them 4-ish hours a week usually of my time, sometimes more, and wow. I do a lot of fundraising for them as well.
What kind of dog is she?
So my dog is like a shepherd, pit bull, mm-hmm. cattle dog, crazy thing.
Yeah.
But I adore her. So I'm really, really, really into dogs.
Okay.
And just animals generally. We just got, we just got some barn cats from the shelter yesterday. So the shelter catches feral cats out in the wild, fixes them.
Wow.
But they're wild cats. Like, these are not cats that want to sit on your lap and cuddle, but they're great for brewery cats.
Yeah.
So I just brought to the brewery yesterday a couple of feral. I have to keep them in a cage, I guess, for a few weeks so they get acclimated.
Okay.
But we have brewery cats now. I'm really excited. So staff is having a really fun time. We're trying to think of names for them. I was like, Saison
awesome.
And Stout, or like, what are we going to call these cats?
Yeah. That's awesome.
Love it.
All right. Teresa, do you have a weird thing that no one knows that you're
right.
into? Are you like LARPing or something?
No LARPing.
Okay.
So I was running through my list of weird things that I do, and I kind of came up with a list of weird things that I will get back to one day because I'm just too freaking busy right now. But I'm way into fly fishing.
Is that right?
That's
yes.
Cool.
I am.
I didn't know that.
Oh, you didn't. I didn't.
Oh, that is awesome.
Yes. So I spent years like learning how to fly fish, but also learning how to spey cast, which is the two-handed rod that you use for steelhead.
Okay.
And then I got so into it, the year I got pregnant with my first son, I was going to do a spey casting competition.
Wow.
Because I can
That's
cast
into it.
A country mile.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
And I'm super,
I love this.
Competitive.
One
it sounds
day,
like you're pretty competitive
super
about
competitive.
It.
Super competitive. And I was like, oh my God, a sport that I can just stand here and like freaking do in the river. Yeah, I love it. But I haven't done a lot of it in recent years. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it's on your list to get back to,
it
I'm
is,
sure.
And there's a whole thing, like there, it's, I mean, my other thing is Volkswagens. I think we did talk about this. But like, there's like, as much as the brewing network is a thing, there's like the spay casting network.
Wow.
In
I
life.
Believe
and
it.
Like, yeah.
I totally believe it.
Amazing.
Super fun. So,
yeah.
That's
okay.
my thing.
That's really cool.
That is a cool
like,
one.
I mean, pretty badass, actually.
Well, I would love to just take somebody and be like, hey, watch this.
That's awesome. Okay. If you could retire wealthy tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
where would you live?
You know, honestly, I think I would live where I live. I know that sounds kind of boring.
Do you live in Capitola?
No, I live in Santa Cruz. I might go get some land because
okay.
I'd probably start a dog rescue.
Okay, yeah. Right.
I told you I'm a crazy dog lady.
Yeah.
So I would take all that money and I would get a big piece of land and then I would fill it with dogs that are at risk of being euthanized
Amazing.
Somewhere. Literally, that would be, that is 100% what I would do.
That's fair.
But I love where I live. Not this year so much. Sorry, winter. I don't like you very much this year. But no, I love where we live. I mean, I think that, you know, we're not, it's Santa Cruz is weird. It's like kind of not the Bay Area, kind of not the Central Coast. We're kind of in this no man's land. And sometimes people want to claim us and sometimes they don't.
right.
But I feel like I'm close enough to nature. Mm-hmm. Like I've got nature really close to me. But then I have I've got the city or, you know, Oakland, or I've got big city really close to me too. So I feel like I'm literally equidistant between San Francisco and Big Sur.
Okay. That's pretty good.
So that's a pretty good place to be.
Yep.
And honestly, I have a really amazing group of friends and a great community there.
Yeah.
And I feel like as we get older, that's really important.
Absolutely. That's a legit answer. And by the way, I wouldn't move much farther than I'm at either.
Yeah.
I probably wouldn't be living specifically in a driveway in my RV, but I would be in the
in the
greater Bay Area.
Yeah.
Teresa, retire wealthy.
Okay.
But you only have till tomorrow to decide.
So I'm going to have... Can I have two houses? Because I can put one in Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Love Santa Cruz. Mm-hmm. The other one, Costa Rica.
Oh, Costa Rica's great, too.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
You've been. That's not just from postcards. Okay.
I went last year about this time.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
I remember that.
It was super rad.
Yeah, okay. It's beautiful. Yeah.
All right. Okay. I think I might already have an answer to this one. But before you discovered brewing, what was your dream profession? Like, I don't know, when you're a teenager or in college.
Okay, when I was really young, I wanted to be a professional baseball player.
You did?
Yes.
Well,
now, I did not play baseball on any team, but I just thought baseball was rad.
Do you still love baseball?
And
or no?
You know, not really. Okay, yeah. But I did follow it as a kid, and I thought it was so cool. And there were not, and still really aren't, women baseball players.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to be the first woman. It's funny. I guess I had these like ambitious like dreams of being the first or something. I wanted to be the first woman baseball player. I had a mitt and a ball.
Yeah.
That was it.
This answer. It's going to take a while for someone to top this answer for me. I think that's a great answer.
That was it. First professional woman baseball player.
Okay.
Yeah, that was my like childhood, what I was going to be. When I actually had to think about what I wanted to be, honestly, it kind of took a while. I kind of bounced around and, you know, tried a number of different things before I landed on going to law school, which honestly really probably the right thing for the way my brain works.
Okay.
But yeah, professional baseball player would have been pretty cool. And honestly, there still isn't the first woman professional baseball player.
No, we've just barely gotten to first woman coaches.
Right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, and that was, you know, I'm not a spring chicken. So that was a long time ago.
Yeah, no, that's got to change.
Yeah.
I love this. If I was going to do a Dare trivia or your speaker introduction, for example, I would throw this tidbit in there.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah. No, I used to follow the stats in the newspaper.
Okay.
Because there was no internet back then.
Yeah.
So I would, you know, track all the teams.
Yes, I love this. In the newspaper.
The newspaper.
Are you into music at all?
Yeah.
Okay. Then in your opinion, who's the best band in the world? And it could be past or present, but
in the world.
The greatest ever.
Oh, that's so hard.
I know.
That's a really hard one. And I'm sort of biased because one of the bands I really like is because I'm like have the biggest crush on the lead singer. So I'm not sure if I'm like being really rational about the whole thing.
That's okay.
Okay, TV on the Radio.
Oh, is that right?
I have the biggest crush on the lead singer.
That's fair. These are all reasons.
These
count.
Are fair. No, but if I were like really like musically, my partner listens to a lot of like 60s and 70s jazz and funk, which I've really gotten into and didn't. Know a lot about, and so I listen to a lot of that now.
Yeah.
But you know, before that, you know, I grew up in San Diego, so I actually just got the new pressing of the Three Mile Pilot album. I don't know how familiar you are with Three Mile Pilot. They were a San Diego band from like the early 90s. So that's kind of, I came up in kind of that San Diego grungy.
Okay.
You know, San Diego was kind of trying to compete with Seattle at the time for a grungy capital. So I kind of came up with that like alternative-y music.
Yeah, so did I. Okay.
Scene stuff.
All right.
Yeah.
Teresa, do you have a best band in the world?
Oh, man. Yeah.
Go ahead.
You
look like you're embarrassed about it.
I am. Well, a little because it's super mainstream, but like Pearl Jam popped in my head as soon as you said this.
They're in my top something. Definitely top 10, maybe top 5.
Yeah. I had a crush on Eddie Vedder too.
Oh, I still have a crush on Eddie Vedder.
Yeah. Come on. Okay. All right. What food, or it could even be like a specific dish, could you not live without?
I'm going to go like real bare bones and go food. like not even a dish.
Just food.
Beans.
Oh,
beans.
Really?
Beans.
Like
you're
a
not
staple.
Giving up the beans.
Like beans, if I were on a desert island and the only thing, and I had to pick one thing to eat.
Yeah.
Not a dish because you're on an island. You aren't going to have spices. You're not going to have all that. You're not going to make a dish. Beans.
Like a specific type of bean?
Not necessarily.
Right.
Just beans.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I love beans. I mean, they're full of like all kinds of things that are good for you.
True, yeah.
Lots of fiber.
Yeah.
That's good for you. And they're filling.
Yeah.
I mean, beans are like, they always feel good.
Yeah.
And there are so many cool new heirloom types of beans out there.
Sure.
So yeah, beans.
That's amazing.
I know, it's sort of a strange answer.
Yeah.
Beans.
Okay.
My partner is like laughing right now because he knows.
He's
this
like, yep.
Yeah, he knows this answer.
He's
yeah.
Like, he's probably opening a cupboard that you have full of beans right now.
Yeah. They had, I even like refried beans out of the can. They had Amy's refried beans on sale at somewhere in Santa Cruz, and I bought like all of them. So I came home with like two bags full of refried beans.
I love
what are you going to do with these? I was like, they're on sale. Put them in the garage. We'll eat them at some point.
They last forever.
They last forever. They're in a can.
So do you make your, like, do you soak
I usually soak the beans and make my own beans.
It's kind of a dumb question because you're a bean enthusiast.
I'm a bean
enthusiast. Open a can.
Yeah. But I will open a can of refried beans if I have to. But I Amy's is my go-to for canned beans if we're talking about canned beans.
No, I appreciate the recommendation. Well, also, refried beans, that's a real skill to make, I think.
Yeah, I don't make refried beans.
Yeah, that's tough.
That's hard.
And I'm old school about that. Like, if there's no lard in those refried beans, they're not that good.
Yeah, Amy's no lard. They're vegetarian beans.
Oh, okay.
So you might not like them.
Yeah, I got to go old school.
Yeah. No, I get it. I totally get it. Yeah, I love a good beans with like ham hocks. Soaked in there. Yeah,
okay.
Beans and greens is like my comfort food that I make when I need like if I'm like need to like settle in and feel cozy.
Yeah,
I make this dish called beans and greens, which is basically just
tell me. Yeah,
it's andouille sausage.
Okay,
collard greens, kale. And beans. And I've made the beans, you know, like usually that morning or something.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, and a bunch of chicken broth. And you just like, you have to do it in stages, but you cook that all together with a bunch of spices and paprika and cumin. And
it sounds delicious.
Stuff, and it's just like this big bowl of slop that is delicious.
What kind of beans?
You can switch it up.
Doesn't matter.
Okay. Pinquitos are very forgiving beans.
Okay.
So if you overcook your pinquitos, they'll hold together pretty well.
Okay.
But you need something that's going to hold together pretty well because usually you have at least one or two more days of beans and greens servings.
Okay.
So you need a bean that's not going to fall apart in your refrigerator.
Got it.
When you're storing them.
I might need this recipe.
It's not a recipe. It's just like you just throw
You just gave it to me.
You just do it in stages and there it is.
Sounds so good. Okay. If you could be any other person for one day, who would it be?
Can they be dead? Or
yep,
like
totally. Yeah. I mean, yeah, we can defy the laws of physics. Why not?
Yeah. This might sound sort of generic, but it's not really coming from my background. But Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, you know, I used to practice law, like you said. Mm. And part of me did really want to be a judge and civil rights and sort of, you know, again, wanting to be the first woman baseball player and sort of advancing people's rights was always very important to me in that regard. And she was a badass.
That's a great pick. There's nothing generic about that.
Yeah.
She was a total badass.
She was a badass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How about you, Teresa?
Oh, man.
One
this
person.
This is a killer, actually. I think I would be my daughter for a day.
Oh, that is so cool.
So I could understand her really well.
Yeah.
But then, like, peace. I want the ability
to
peace out if there is some disturbing information that comes to light.
Right. Yeah. You don't want to be a teenager. So one day is good, right?
Like, one day, but also, like, with a... No, I don't need a filter.
Just full
but
on.
Just one day. Yeah, just one day.
That's a great answer, too.
Yeah.
I like that.
Being a teenager was hard enough that one time, though.
Oh, man.
Oh, my gosh. I remember, like, so I had a great teacher in high school, the Starskys. I had Mr. Starsky and Mrs. Starkey. I added an S there. Sorry. Sorry, Mr. Starkey.
Yeah.
But anyway, they would have us journaling.
Oh, cool.
Like 10 pages a day, and they would just count the pages. But you had to write about your life for like 10 pages, which was a lot.
That's a lot.
But it was so good because that time in your life is really hard.
Yeah, it's right. Yeah.
And so you had the time to like process your stuff. And I saved these for a while, but I was like, I'm afraid somebody will find this and read my 16-year-old thoughts. And I don't think I want that. Like, I'm going to save them here. And we're gonna let these go. Yeah.
My mom found mine at one point.
Oh no!
No bueno.
Oh no!
Yeah. No, yeah. My mom would not have been happy about this information.
But. Yeah, no.
My nephew's 17 right now, and I just said this to my brother.
My
like, I always thought I'd be the old guy who's like, you don't got any problems. Yeah. But he was telling me about his problems the other day, and I was like, oh god, that poor kid. I don't. I don't. miss that at all. I feel bad for him, even though my adult brain sees them as relatively simple to fix. I can relate to what it was like then, and I'm like, oh, that poor kid.
Yep.
In fact, since we're doing this with you two, a little known fact about me, I have a particular fear about reincarnation being true. I really don't want it to be. Not reincarnation where you can become some other thing, but like the theory that that maybe we relive this life until we get it right. You've heard this kind of spiritual theory.
But not that you're going to come back as your dog, which is
You come back as you. You just keep doing this until you get it right. And then you're allowed to move on to like another plane or whatever. It has a name. I don't remember what it is. Because immediately when I heard it, I became terrified because I don't want to relive my teenage years. I was like, absolutely not.
Well, especially now with like Instagrams and things that we didn't have to worry about. Yeah.
So it's so hard. Yeah. It's super hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's not hard for me, but I know how hard it can be for them. So I'm like throwing up all the gates. Like, let's not do any of this stuff. But
I'm just going to lock you in your room until you graduate.
Yeah. You'll thank me later. You'll
thank me later.
No, I'll lock you in the living room where I can keep my eyes on you. So.
Yeah.
It's true. I got really good at sneaking out of my room.
Yeah, I was pretty good.
So good. Yeah, so good.
Beauty of like living in the suburbs, all ground floor rooms. Yeah, I just climbed out that window.
Yeah.
You know. What's the best movie you've seen in the last 5 years?
Oh,
I had to give you a little. I had to clear.
5 years is a lot because I could do a year.
You could do that. Okay.
I could do a year. I'm going to pick two actually, and they're both kind of animal centric. I haven't actually seen a lot of the movies in the last year. I did see all the movies, or a lot of the movies that were nominated. I thought Everything Everywhere All at Once was fantastic.
Yeah,
that
I liked
one the other day. That was good.
Yeah.
But my favorite movies, there was a Polish movie that came out called Io.
Okay, I haven't heard of it.
It's about a donkey.
Okay.
I mean, it's not about a donkey, but the story is told through the donkey, basically.
Okay.
And I thought that was a really well-done film.
Okay.
And then there was a documentary that was actually up for an Academy Award and didn't win, and it was called All That Breathes. And it's about two brothers in India who take these kite birds, and they started this little like wildlife rescue basically in their basement with very little resources to help fix up these kite birds and like rescue these
that are endangered.
It was that was a lovely, I mean, and not just because of the storyline, which obviously spoke to me, but the cinematography in both of those films was so beautiful.
I'll watch it then. I just read about that the other day because I wanted to know who was nominated.
Yep.
And that one caught my eye, so I went and read the full description.
It was great.
And I'm a geek about cinematography.
Yep.
I can, in fact, I'll often have to watch movies a couple times if the cinematography is really good because I'm very distracted on that.
Yep.
That I'm missing half
the
story.
You're missing
like
what's happening.
Yeah. I'm just like, oh, did you see the way they did that scene? And so,
I actually need to watch EO again because I went to the theater. It's one of the two movies I've seen in the theater since COVID. Mm-hmm. I have not. I've only been to the movies twice.
Okay. Yeah.
Sorry, movie theaters.
Well, that's why I gave the 5 year in case you had to go back.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I have, you know, obviously we watched movies at home. But when I went to EO, the person sitting next to me had clearly forgotten about movie manners. So they talked through the entire movie.
Mm.
And so I did miss a lot of it, but it was very good what I saw. But yeah, that's a lot of us lost our
manners.
Lost our manners during COVID.
The lost art of manners. That's a good beer name.
That is a great
it's
beer
all
name.
Yours.
We lost our manners.
The
lost art of manners.
It's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. She literally was just like, what is that? Is that a boat? Is that a car? I mean, just loud for the whole theater to hear. So it was an interesting experience to say the least. It was kind of a quiet film.
My dad is like that. And I refuse to go to movies
like
with him.
Like pre-COVID too, like this is just him.
Well, yes, but there's a couple things that aren't his fault, but there's a lot that are his fault. So I won't go to him. Luckily, my partner will take him.
That's good.
But for one, he's on oxygen. So he has to bring this little oxygen machine, which is rather loud.
Mm-hmm.
He's also a diabetic with like a pump thing that beeps loudly every, I don't know, it seems to me like 2 minutes, but it's probably a little longer than that. So he has all these alarms that go off, right?
Yep.
But honestly, worse than all that, he's like the guy who's like, what are they doing? Why don't she turn around?
Go.
So my partner takes him to none other than A Quiet Place.
Oh, dear.
Have you seen this movie?
No, but I know what it's about.
Okay. The movie basically takes place in complete silence.
It's a quiet place.
And she takes him to, and I said, what are you thinking? And she wasn't thinking at the time. And she just sat there so incredibly embarrassed. And I was like, oh, I will never.
He needs to go to action movies,
totally.
Right?
Totally.
Because those are loud, even if you're in the theater next door.
A lot of explosions.
Take him to Transformers, for heaven's sake.
Yeah.
I won't even do that, but when she told me she took him to A Quiet Place, that's ridiculous. Poor guy, but come on. okay, I have one more, and we're going to end it on beer.
Great.
If that's all right.
Yeah.
This might sound generic, but I think it's important. Is there a beer or a brewery that inspired you the most in your whole path? Doesn't have to be just when you started, but just some, you know, I know you're so inspired by the Belgian traditions, but is there a beer or a brewery?
Yep. Without a doubt, and I tell this to people all the time, I feel like Russian River has always been my North Star. Mm. I feel like not only have they stuck, first of all, they treat their employees really well, which is important to me.
Yeah.
But they have always stuck by the quality of their beers, and they've always grown organically. So they're not chasing, you know, dollars, if you will. They're basically, they've always just sort of grown as they've needed to meet the demand that they have built because their beer is so good.
Yeah.
And they're just really nice people. Mm-hmm. You know, before we were getting started, just when Tim was homebrewing, for instance, if you emailed Russian River, and I think I've heard recently that this is the same to this day, frequently Vinny will be the person who emails you back.
It's a true story.
Yeah. With like a homebrewing question, and Vinny will email you back.
Yep.
And you don't get that kind of you know, there aren't a lot of people who stay humble in that way, that they will still, you know, give that information out to homebrewers. So they've always kind of been my North Star that way. Like, don't follow the hype. Don't follow the, you know, whatever the, you know, this guy's doing that and this is the hot thing this week. And because they've always just sort of stuck to their plan or to their guns. And I don't really know how to describe it. But so I've always described them as sort of my North Star.
It's a great answer. To me, they embody a philosophy that to me goes throughout any industry and your career. And that is go ahead and do what you do.
Yep.
But do it very, very well.
Yeah.
Like you said, you know, they're not saying follow the trends to do this hype. Just do you.
Do you.
But you better
do it well.
Really, really well.
Yep. And that's what they've done.
Yeah. And they do sort of you can tell how much they care about doing it well.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'll give you that. That's a great
answer. I feel like they have a lot of, I mean, not like feel like, I know they have a lot of integrity.
Yeah.
And for me, as a consumer and as a business owner, I think integrity and authenticity are sort of the two things that are the most important. And so they embody both of those things.
I think you're right. You know, there are some breweries that you could say their success is, you know, either a fluke or a bit of luck or this or that. But most of them, to me, are because they really care about what they do. They have that level of integrity.
Yep.
And they always strive to do it well and better and better and better. So most of us who have been around this long are actually because of that.
Yep.
Not because of the luck part.
Not because of the luck part.
The luck got us maybe going.
Absolutely. You know, but to stick around, you really have to have your ducks in a row.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Teresa, do you have one?
Yeah, I was going to pick Russian River myself.
Yeah.
So, you can still pick them.
I'm still picking them. I'm sticking with them. I mean, there's so many breweries that I feel like have influenced us and like I look up to. Urban Roots is definitely one of them in the Sacramento area. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, the way they have freely given their knowledge and help and like encouragement and recipes. And I mean, as a home brewer, it was a total trip to me that you could look up what Pliny the Elder recipe is and brew it yourself, like, and actually make decent beer. You know, I mean, that's just so cool. Yep.
Early on, when early on before we started, Vinny was at homebrew events. He would give out wood chips with his culture on them.
Yeah.
So that you could. And so that is definitely part of our culture somewhere. There's a lot of stuff that's in our culture.
Yeah.
But that was definitely, you know, part of the one of the building blocks.
I remember that.
Of our culture.
That's awesome.
Our wood chips from Vinny and Natalie. And, you know, the fact that they were have been able to sort of straddle, again, this sort of mixed fermentation program and clean beers and make them both very well.
Yes.
I think we try to do that as well. And so, they've always been an inspiration to us.
For sure. Well, yeah. I have three. I would have cheated on this question.
You can't cheat.
I'd have to mention three. There's no other way. I could maybe narrow it down to two, but it's probably three. Russian River.
Okay.
You know, and our careers have been pretty close together. He was one of my first guests back in 2005. Also, Sierra Nevada.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And so that's a given. You know, the fact that they're still family owned, the way that Ken looks at quality control and quality in general, quality in my life, I spent a lot of time in college studying the word quality. And it has so many like far-reaching effects in everything that you do. Again, the do what you do, but do it well. That's right. All based around quality and how you get to quality and the methods and the things you have to do, the skills you have to gain. So to me, Sierra Nevada like embodies that. And the third one is the 21st Amendment, and specifically Sean O'Sullivan.
Yeah, Sean's great.
Sean O'Sullivan was absolutely what he was my very first sponsor that paid me any money. He stood in my kitchen when my studio was in the garage and told me, you have to do something with this idea of yours. You have to keep going. This show that you're doing is going to mean something. Like, really. And then just watching him do the same things in his business. He was the first guy I know that was doing cans.
Yeah,
I know he probably wasn't the very first person.
Very early.
But when he was on the can route, I was like, Sully, you're crazy. I don't even know what you're thinking. But he was right.
He was. I was anti-can when cans first started.
Yeah.
I mean, I really was. I was like, this is not, I don't want to drink, I want to drink my beer out of a bottle. I don't want a can.
Yeah.
You know.
So. And then I watched him enlist people that he admired to give him more ideas about how to grow his company, like to get where they wanted to go. And so we were so close through all of that working together that he was a real inspiration to me. He knows I like him a lot. I don't think he knows all of this because, yeah, watching him build the 21st Amendment to what it was, I got to see him from when he was just the pub.
I remember the pub.
Right? You know,
I used to drive from Santa Cruz to go to the pub.
To go to the pub. Oh, two blocks. Back then, it was 2 blocks from AT&T Park.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, now it's whatever park it is. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, I would not, of the three, Sully's not one I could have left out of that list.
Yeah
he's definitely an inspirational one.
Yeah, one more thing about Sierra Nevada that a lot of people probably don't know. They are really pioneers in sort of environmental stewardship. I mean, they have done a lot of work on, they have a whole sustainability program, and they are really, you know, focused on how to be a sustainable brewery into the future given limited resources. So, I mean, that's a really cool, you know, tiny people like me, I can't have a sustainability department. I have like 20 employees across all three locations, but they have, you know, really put their money where their mouth is when it comes to environmental sustainability, which I think is really awesome.
They have, and like you mentioned, you know, I'm a small company. You're a small company that maybe can't afford to do that. But not only have they pioneered that, but they're able to do it in a way that is profitable,
yes,
that increases profitability in some ways, right? So you do get to a point where you can do that, and they are setting that example.
Yep.
If it wasn't profitable, maybe they'd still do some of it, but not all of it,
right?
Right. And so when you mention that, that's what I think of too, is that that's inspirational.
It is.
That's like, because you can look at it now and go, well, I can't yet have that. But they are proving that it can be done. Right.
Yep.
So, and that's important. You know, I'm a bleeding heart liberal, but I'm also a skeptic of myself. And I can't always stand here and say the utmost environmentalism is the most important thing we do.
Right.
No, paying your employees.
Paying your employees, number one.
It's probably
the doors open, job one.
And the rent.
And
employees.
Yeah, that stuff's really important.
It's real.
But it doesn't mean that the other stuff can't be done,
yep,
you know, as you grow.
Yep. Yep.
You know, and I'm sure you pick small measures here and there that do fit into your program.
Yeah, we just started. We were sort of forced into side streaming all of our, all of the live products that come off of our tanks. All of our, not our wastewater per se. I was trying to find a word to describe it, but go to our we're in a tiny little sewer district, and they were starting to notice buildup in our drains just from, you know, little things going down the drain. So now everything gets side streamed, and we have various farmers and a fertilizer company actually who comes and picks up. They brought us a bunch of totes.
Perfect.
We put everything in there. They take it down. You know, there's a ton of agriculture down in Santa Cruz County and Salinas Valley area.
Yeah.
And so they use a lot of our runoff essentially,
right,
as fertilizing products.
See, that's amazing because it's a super simple step that took something that was 100% waste, or at least being treated as it, to 100% like reproductive.
Yep.
That's great.
Yep.
And you can see that. You see the breweries who work with that. Those who are able to connect with farmers who take grain and things like, you know, that stuff can be done on a small scale.
Yep.
But when Sierra Nevada put in a rail spur,
right,
I was like, oh, these guys. Wow. Whatever. And I just, you know, I like picturing Ken in his big office sometimes just going like, what if I had my own train station? And not because he's greedy, but he's like, I would save on fuel. We would get so much more grain delivered. Yep. We would all this stuff. Yeah. I just like thinking of his brain working that way.
I think that is how his brain works. Yeah. I think it's just constantly turning, all the...
Yeah. Like that guy. All right. Well, Adair, thank you.
Thank you. This has been a lot of fun.
I'm glad you had fun. That's we strive to do that. I appreciate you driving down. Big storms out there.
Big storms.
No floods for you in Santa Cruz area?
Lots of floods in Santa Cruz. Okay. I have not been personally affected by the floods, but a lot of people have been. It's pretty bad, and it might actually get worse tonight, unfortunately.
That's what I saw.
Yeah. There's a whole area of the Pajaro, primarily migrant workers, who've had to be evacuated. It's pretty bad down there.
Wow. So the lowlands right of
the lowlands.
Santa,
there was a levee that breached, a river levee breached, and flooded an entire low lying area. So Highway 1 is actually closed, just south of Santa Cruz right now, north and south. You cannot go down to Monterey right now on Highway 1.
I think I saw that too. It's Monterey Island now, Monterey Peninsula.
It's not quite an island, but they think it will be tomorrow. Because if the Salinas River breaches, then it will turn Monterey into an island, essentially.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty bad. We've gotten the sort of eye of every atmospheric river that has come through since January. So people are just sort of hunkering down. And, thankfully, our brewery is up on higher ground, and my house is on higher ground, and I haven't had any employees who are severely affected. Some people have lost power and had a lot of inconveniences.
Sure.
But no one's had to evacuate or lost their home or anything, so that's good.
It's been gnarly.
It's been gnarly.
Yeah. Okay,
fires
drought.
1 year and then this.
Gosh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we didn't have a super strong fire season.
We didn't.
So something had to happen.
Something had to happen.
Yeah. I joked too, like during the pandemic, because everything, it kept being like something else, right? Something else. I was like, what are we going to have next in California? Hurricanes? That's not even possible.
Yep.
And now we have this. Yep. I'm close.
Well, now we're getting thunderstorms, which actually are pretty fun. But
love
we never,
them.
But we
yeah.
never
I
get
love
thunderstorms.
I do
too. I love them, but they're so weird for us.
They are
weird.
Yeah. Yo, and and of course, the last time we had thunderstorms, it started our fire season.
It started our fire season.
So, be careful what we wish for.
Yep.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah. Well, thanks for coming down too, Teresa. I always love having you in the studio.
Oh, my pleasure. This was especially wonderful. It's so nice to spend this time with you.
Yeah, great to spend time with you, Teresa. Yeah.
So go to RusticAles.com. You can learn more. You can read about their story, which we talked a little bit about today, but you can read more if you want. You can find out about their three locations. I've only been to one, so I got to get to work myself.
You got to get to work.
Yeah, I got to get on that BART train and head down to Oakland.
Yeah.
At least that. Go to RusticAles.com, learn more about Sante, where you can get their beer, and all of those things. As I mentioned, go to CaliforniaCraftBeer.com, get your tickets to the California Craft Beer Summit, and then you can hang out with us. You should also get your tickets to Spring Brews Festival. Go to TheBrewingNetwork.com. It's coming up on March 25th, rain or shine, 60 breweries, 8 different food trucks. It'll be super fun. Up next on the show, next episode, I have JC from Trillium Brewing Company's coming on.
Fun.
I couldn't get him to drive out here, so he's
a pretty long drive from Boston.
Yeah, so he's going to be on Zoom with me, but I'm excited nonetheless. We got his beer here, though. He did ship out beer.
He makes great beer.
He really does. Yep. So we've got Trillium on tap here at the Hop Grenade. Come on out and check it out. And that's about it for us. Thanks for hanging in there. We'll see you next time. Take care of yourselves and your beer.
The Session is a production of the Brewing Network and brought to you by More Beer. Check them out at morebeer.com. Find more content and live video of this show on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/brewingnetwork. For sponsorship opportunities and information, please reach out to advertising@thebrewingnetwork.com. To reach our hosts, contact feedback@thebrewingnetwork.com.